The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and a three-time Jeopardy champion. You can find Book and Film Globe at www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. I mentioned Jeopardy in my introduction because there is a new version of Jeopardy on Amazon Prime called Pop Culture Jeopardy, and I'm a contestant on that with my team, the Recruits. Kate and Cicely and I do battle with other pop culture trivia obsessives, and I'm going to talk to one of my opponents in my opening round game, Jessica Babbitt, and she's also a three-time Jeopardy champion. We have a great conversation coming up about pop culture Jeopardy and being a trivia obsessive in general. And I'm also going to talk to Omar Gayaga, our frequent contributor, about the amazing new season of Squid Game, which is now on Netflix. Squid Game 2 is airing, and it is not a letdown from the first season at all. But first, Jessica Babbitt will be here to talk to me about pop culture Jeopardy right after this brief interlude.
I'm Colin Jost, the host of Pop Culture Jeopardy. You guys ready? Famous because the internet.
What is Had Your Kids, Had Your What?
Yep. TV by episode titles.
What is The Sopranos?
New episodes of Pop Culture Jeopardy airing Wednesdays on Prime. Do things air on streaming?
Regular listeners of this show might know that in addition to being a Rotten Tomatoes approved film critic and an astute observer of all things pop culture, I'm also a Jeopardy contestant, a three-time Jeopardy champion. And if you don't know that, if you know me in real life, you definitely know that because it's one of the three things I ever talk about. But now you know. And you can also know that I am a contestant on the current season of Pop Culture Jeopardy, which has recently debuted on Amazon Prime. It's a team-based game, so I appeared on Pop Culture Jeopardy with two teammates, Kate and Cicely, who are pub trivia teammates of mine here in Austin. We did not win. I can say that now because our episode came out on January 1st. We were defeated by a team called Only Winners in the Building, and out of the spirit of my magnanimous spirit has led me to invite one of the members of that team, Jessica Babbitt, here to talk to me about Pop Culture Jeopardy today. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Neil. Thrilled to be here.
Yes. So, well, congratulations on beating me at Jeopardy.
Thank you very much. One of the joys of my life.
Yeah. I mean, just winning in general. But, you know, beating me is always, people are always happy to knock me down a peg. You're one of the few people who have ever beaten me at Jeopardy. But I wanted to have you on because, you know, you're a veteran of Jeopardy as well. You are a three-time solo champion, and you are now, at least, we can't reveal what happens to your team after this round because it hasn't aired yet, at least a one-time pop culture Jeopardy champion. So maybe you could explain to folks how this particular version of Jeopardy is different than the regular Jeopardy.
Oh, in all kinds of fun and exciting ways. It feels familiar. If you're a watcher of Jeopardy, a lover of Jeopardy, you'll definitely find a lot of the things that you love in pop culture Jeopardy, but it differs from Jeopardy. As Neil mentioned, it's a team game. There are teams made up of all kinds of different relationships. There's friends, there's family, there's many, many thruples. So that's thruples. Something to look forward to.
I wouldn't even know what that means.
Check it out on Urban Dictionary. Look that up after you.
Yeah, well, I understand what it is, but it's not a part of my experience. All right, so go ahead, continue.
But the questions are made up of all pop culture, everything from the oeuvre of pop culture. And I really mean everything when I say that. We're talking sports, music, movies, all the things that you expect, but there's also celebrity gossip and TikTok and all kinds of contemporary things that we spend our time doing and engaging with now. So if you are a lover of Jeopardy and you find yourself yelling at the TV when the contestants aren't familiar with a picture of Timothée Chalamet, this is this is going to be the Jeopardy for you.
Yeah, these contestants are familiar. Timothy Chalamet, that's a layup 200-point question. I mean, there was a category in our game of TikTok dances. That was not what I wanted to see.
We were thrilled to see it. That was one of the things we were hoping for. We really wanted some TikTok content, and we're glad that we got it.
I was hoping for more sort of 70s sitcom questions, but I realized that was a bit of a pipe dream. But the answers I got were like, I recognize a photo of Conan the Destroyer.
I had absolutely no idea about. So well right. placed.
More of that. And then David Gilmour from Pink Floyd. I was ready for that one.
Yeah, those were not for me. But I will tell you that I did know every celebrity that dated. So
yeah, I had that. Well, and so I know how I know what I know. I mean, how do you know stuff like TikTok dances and every celebrity? People always want to know, how do you know all this stuff?
Yeah, so just from consuming culture, one of the things when people ask me, how did you do so well at regular Jeopardy? I say everything that I ever learned, I learned from The Simpsons. So it started very young. I'm just a consumer of culture. I enjoy watching television. I enjoy watching movies. I enjoy listening to podcasts about television and movies. I like the gossip sites. I like the social media sites. I have put way too many hours into TikTok. What will happen if it leaves? I don't know. I don't know what I will do with that time. But it's really from being an enjoyer and a consumer of the popular culture. It's not a study. I don't think that there really is a way that you can study all of this material. These types of things are the kinds of things you know from enjoying.
Well, yeah, and that's especially true with pop culture Jeopardy. I mean, there's a way to study for regular Jeopardy. I mean, I don't enjoy science particularly, but I can't, I like the idea of science, but I don't, I'm not a scientist or I didn't take a lot of science classes in school, but you can study sort of the basic things you need to know about science and history and geography and Shakespeare and all the sort of the academic stuff. But, that's why the popular culture and sports categories often kind of go flat on regular Jeopardy, because that's just the kind of stuff you have to know from being a dork.
Yeah, that is true. And you had told me, Neil, that after our match, that you and your team had spent time preparing and studying and drilling. And I thought to myself, well, that's fantastic, but how? Because when I was on regular Jeopardy in 2020, I spent a lot of time memorizing things, lists, things that are finite. There are only so many state capitals. There are only so many Shakespeare plays. There are only so many,
flags
and what's on the state quarters and, lots of states here. What's the state nicknames? There are only so many of those. So anything that I could memorize, I memorized. But when I sat down with my team, Elise and Mackenzie, to discuss how we were going to prepare for this, we kind of came up short a little bit with the ways that we were going to do that. All we could think of, well, let's just keep consuming. Let's keep reading.
We did that, of course. But what we did was I play on these online, you play in these online trivia leagues as well. And I play a pop culture one. And so we took a bunch of those old quizzes and we just went over them and drilled them, and just in case, that maybe may bring you one or two answers, but you never know if it could come up at a key moment. So we looked at that, and I did a bunch of Sporkle quizzes.
Yes.
Sporkle has a lot of pop culture content on there. So you never know, one of those triple plays comes up and you have to name three Disney princesses. I know that's that's like naming your childhood pets for you, but for me, maybe not quite as natural. But you just want
to. It is an area of expertise. That is.
Yes,
true.
Right. I know you are a Disney head. So
I'm a Disney person.
Possibly, actually, someone created by Disney to defeat me in a trivia competition. So so we did that, and then we also we just kind of sat around and talked about stuff that we know pop culture wise, because Cicely, Kate, and I all have different areas of expertise, right? Cicely has some deep nerd knowledge on stuff. Kate is a pop culture genius. I'm not a pop music genius and a pop culture genius, but pop music genius. And I have a very deep knowledge of TV and film. So we kind of just, we're deciding who knew what and to what extent. I mean, I had never heard Chapel Roan before.
Oh, wow.
I'm a man in his 50s.
Well, you're in for a treat, Neil.
Well, I know it now. I know so much more now than I did before I started this odyssey. And then we also did buzzer training.
Yes, we did too. And chemistry games as well. So we could really, to your point, figure out what each other's strengths and weaknesses are. And I will say that that is one of the best decisions we made. Listen, our team was always going to be our team. We always knew that when this was announced, there was no questions. Our team is our team. This is who we are coming in with. But as we trained together, we really realized we are a well-composed team. We kind of span an age range of about 15 years. We fill each other's knowledge gaps. I will say that you can see, I won't spoil it for anybody that hasn't watched it, but in Double Jeopardy, our team landed on Daily Double. And when the question comes up, you can see the look of sheer terror in my face and Mackenzie's face because we didn't know the answer. We had no idea.
Right. And Elise knew it right away.
Elise knew it right away. And just the relief that washed over me when I saw her look at me, like, isn't it obvious?
Well, that's it. The same thing happened on our Daily Double where I did not know. I have seen some Breaking Bad, but I'm not like our deep knowledge of Breaking Bad, but Cicely knew it right away.
Oh yeah.
And so that's what's different about this game, right? There's three of you, right?
Yes.
So there's just not a lot of, if you're a good team, I mean, you know, and you guys were the last, when I saw that you were in the mix, they were the last, you were the last team we wanted to go up against because you're all not only former Jeopardy contestants like we are, but you're all former Jeopardy champions and at least three-time champions. So I'm like, oh man, that's going to be a tough game. And it was, that was a tough game, man.
It was the hardest game of Jeopardy I've ever played. And I played many. And it was what I tell people who ask about this one is it felt during it like a fist fight. And at the end of it, I felt like I had just been in a fight. Like it was exhausting and it was, my heart rate was up the whole time. And it was a volley. It was the most competitive game of Jeopardy I've ever played. And there were a lot of times during that game where it was very, very close. And in the end, it could have gone either way.
Well, it just, you know, in the end, you guys found the last Daily Double that put you over the top. And the final Jeopardy was pretty easy. All three teams got it. And then it was over. And so, look, all respect to you guys.
Thank you.
I think we were contenders. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they'll ask us back. But another thing I wanted to mention about that's different about this Jeopardy, as opposed to regular Jeopardy is that there's nine players buzzing in.
Yes. Very hard. The worst part, in my the part that felt the worst, in my opinion.
Buzzing is a skill, and it's difficult even with a three-handed game. But with a nine-handed game, where like at least one person on the team pretty much knows every answer, it's almost impossible to go on a huge run. I mean, even if you watch the show, you've seen some teams dominate, but for the most part, the games are close because it's just hard to get that buzzing edge, especially when you have a lot of former Jeopardy contestants who kind of know the timing and know how how the mechanism works.
It was agonizing. It felt bad, I will say. It felt bad. And anybody who's ever been on Jeopardy can tell you that one of the terrible feelings in the world is when you know the answer to a clue, you know what the correct response is, and you just can't get in. You cannot get in, and you're watching the money drain off the board. And not into your pocket, not into your score. And that's a terrible feeling. And it's multiplied by three when you have nine people on the stage. And that was a really difficult part for us to contend with. I couldn't get the rhythm of it. I did end up getting it. I rang in quite a few times during our match.
I will say of the nine players, you and then Cicely Squire on my team were the two I think who got in the most.
Cicely was fast, very fast. She had a great game.
She had a very good game. And, you know, I'm not upset. I'm happy with the way I played. I'm happy with the way we played. I wish it had gone differently. But, you know, this is very different than when I was on Jeopardy the first time. Because when I was on Jeopardy the first time, like, I was I was broke. I was kind of at a lull in my career, and I really needed the win. You know, I needed the money and I needed the ego boost, and, you know, and it provided both of those things, which is one of the reasons why I look upon my Jeopardy life so fondly. And also it's just freaking fun to be on TV.
It's the best. It's so much fun. I love playing Jeopardy. Yeah. I love trivia in general, yes. But playing Jeopardy is so much fun. The game is perfectly crafted.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And everybody knows what you're talking about when you're talking about Jeopardy.
Yes.
And it's just so much fun to play. And when we got the call to come on Pop Culture Jeopardy, I thought, well, this is great, because I never thought I would ever be able to play Jeopardy again. Once you finish your run on Jeopardy, and especially if you finish, Neil, in a position like we did, which is 3 wins, which is, you know, respectable.
It's great.
Yeah, it is. You are in let's say the top quartile of players in a season. And
you're in the top. You're really in the top 1% of people who have ever played.
I agree with you. 3 wins is an achievement. It's a feat, but it's not enough to
make the tournament of champions.
Yeah. And these days, I mean, they're finding different ways to bring contestants back again. And I missed that by 1 season, and that's fine. I said to myself at the end of my Jeopardy journey, as we'll call it, and into the following years, when my parents were asking me, like, hey, they're bringing people back, are you ever going to come back? I said, no, I fall into that donut hole where I did too well to get a second chance, but not well enough to go to the Tournament of Champions and play. I was an alternate contestant for the Tournament of Champions during that COVID season. So I was at the tournament, but I did not play. And I just fall into that hole where it's like, it's not going to happen again for me. So to get to play again, thrilling. And also to know, maybe it isn't the end again. Like, I didn't think this opportunity would come around. I didn't think I would be back on stage playing Jeopardy. So who knows what could be.
Yeah. I mean, next. Maybe they'll have, like, you know, a above average champions week.
I would love that. I call me above average at anything.
I would put myself in the above average champions category, if not I'm not a super champion. So you never know. I mean, I was thrilled to be on it again. It was fun. I love Jeopardy. I love being on TV. And I also have to say this, Jessica, after I played against you guys, I was like, I am never going to play trivia against Jessica again. And so Jessica lives in Austin, Texas, where I live. And I have since recruited you to be a member of, like, every trivia team that I can possibly that's allow, where you're not already playing with, like, Elise and McKenzie. So we're going to be playing on it.
I have become a recruit now.
You have become a recruit.
You don't have to play against me anymore, because now we play together.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to be in an online trivia league. I'm excited about that online league. We got a couple of, like, British super players, and this should be pretty good. And we're also, there's a new Jeopardy Bar Trivia League starting up.
Yes, that was really fun. We did play in one of the pilot games, and I had a blast. So looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah, although we missed Final Jeopardy. That's not going to happen again.
I am not known for missing Final Jeopardy. I will say that.
Exactly. The second time we played, the game you couldn't make, there were 5 of us, 5 former Jeopardy contestants. And I think we missed 2 questions the whole game. So that's what we have to look forward to going forward.
I'm excited for that. I'll find any opportunity I can to play trivia, living in absolute fear of playing online against the people who play online. But you know what? I'm just here to have fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And you're part of a team.
Yes.
And we know how to do that. So Jessica, do you guys know when your quarterfinal game? Do you know when that's airing yet?
Not yet. We don't know. We kind of guesstimated when our knockout round game was coming. And we were right. we thought that we would be either on Christmas Day or New Year's Day.
New episodes air Wednesday, and they put up 3 episodes at a time, and they still have a bunch of knockout round weeks to go. So I'm gonna guess you know, mid-February to early March is when you can see Jessica and Only Winners in the Building. Give it another go.
We'll see. Yeah, should be some. I think it'll be sometime around then.
All right. Well, even though the games are already over, I wish you guys the best of luck. And we will see you. I'll be seeing you both online and in person very soon. Jessica Babbitt is a 3-time Jeopardy champion and at least a 1-time Pop Culture Jeopardy champion. And you can catch her and me on Pop Culture Jeopardy on Amazon Prime. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
The current number one series by far on Netflix is Squid Game 2, the second season of the hit show, Korean show Squid Game, about a sort of a Hunger Games, real world Hunger Games gone awry. It's a terrifying, hilarious, and utterly dystopian vision of human greed and desperation. And Omar Gayaga wrote about it for us, and he's here to talk to me about Squid Game 2. Hello, Omar.
Hey, Neil.
Hello. So did you play that game on the subway today? Are you ready to go?
I got the shit slapped out of me.
Yeah. That's the first bad thing that's going to happen to you.
What? It gets worse?
Oh, listen, let me warn you. I won the last one.
Yeah. You look like hell.
Yeah. I'll do everything in my power to hunt down the people who gave me $31 million and destroy them. So Squid Game 2 is a sequel to the Squid Game, and the main plot line concerns the winner, so to speak, of the first Squid Game. What is his name in Korean? Do you remember?
Oh, good. Yeah.
Jihun something.
Jihun, yes.
Yeah, Jihun. And he is what a fabulous character, because he was like this desperate alcoholic gambling addict, and he gradually transformed into this crusader for justice. And, you know, basically, without giving too much away, I mean, he gets sucked back into the game again for a repeat performance, and he tries to stop the game, and the game is more powerful than he is, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, for it to stretch out for another season, and then a third season, which will be the concluding season, we hear. You would probably need a little bit more more than just you can't. He's not going to knock it out in one episode,
right?
But that's sort of the setup for the second season is, you know, at the end of the first season, we saw him sort of opting out of getting on a plane to go live with his fortune and deciding to take them down. And the first couple of episodes of this new season, the Squid Game 2, is sort of set up for that, like him sort of getting his plan in action, connecting with the guy, the police officer from the first season. They kind of join forces. And then a couple episodes in, we're back in the game. He's sort of not by his own accord, but he has found his way back into the Squid Games and is trying to kind of rally everybody from within, which does not go well, as you might imagine.
Not at all. It goes very poorly. You know, the first couple episodes, I was starting to get bored, but there was some good stuff there. He's basically like Batman in the first couple episodes. He's living in this weird motel that's all pink. Everything in it is pink, and he's set up this sort of fortress where he can test weapons and do surveillance on the city. And yeah, he hooks up with the cop who tried to infiltrate the Squid Games. Who did infiltrate the Squid Games in the first season?
It was shot by his brother, who also plays a big part in the season.
Really good and twisted way. I thought they actually, you know, the three main returning characters from the show, I felt like they built on them in a really good way. And I also feel like, this new cast of gamers, there's some really compelling personalities in this cast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a rapper named the character's name is Thanos, who drops some lyrics in both English and Korean, and is just very pretty malevolent. He's a drug user. He manages to sneak some drugs into the games. I don't know how you do that, but he uh, he's kind of a malevolent presence and a kind of a chaos agent within the game. But then you've got like this mother son team that are part of it who unknowingly both, you know, join the games, not knowing that the other one was going to be there. There's a transgender character who's very heroic and has a military background. Like, yeah, they I think one of the things that the show's creator, Hwang Dong-kyuk, does really well is just in a very short amount of time within just a few beats, like you kind of feel like you know the character, you sympathize with the character, you root for them.
You understand their context. There's a crypto coin creator and his pregnant girlfriend who are both in the games unbeknownst to each other. And what's interesting is, and I thought very current, is that, you know, he's like, he created basically a shit coin. And I don't think he didn't rip people off on purpose, but people ended up losing a lot of money. And some of those people in the game, including Thanos the Rapper, are in there because they invested in MC Coin.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think what the show does really efficiently and like it did in the first season was there's 450 some contestants and you get to know, you know, just a very few number of them, but the ones you get to know, you kind of pick up really quickly and efficiently what they're about, you know, where their sympathies are, you know, what their story is, why they're in the games. I think he does a very good job of setting those characters up and differentiating them from the first season. I mean, there are certainly some analogs to the first season and we have the main character who's from the first season, but everybody else is pretty much new within the games, except for our hero. And then the lead man, the head man,
our villain, the front man.
The front man. Yeah. Who is not a rapper, but he called the front man.
He's not a rapper, but he's got everyone wrapped around his finger. That is for sure. Heyo. So, yeah. So, I mean, this season is just great. Like I watched, it's seven episodes, the first part of the season. It did not take me very long to get through it. And they're each an hour long, but it does a great job of, ending the episodes on cliffhangers, and it's extremely violent in the most horrifying way. But yet you just can't stop, you can't look away from Squid Game. The formula really works.
It's very well acted and cast. It's got really strong visuals still, even though there's a little bit of repetition in some of the kind of the striking visuals that we had from the first season. I mean, just some of the interior shots, some of the, you know, the new games that we get to see.
Your favorite. God, the new games. There's this one called Mingle, which is like kind of like a Korean version of musical chairs, right?
Yeah.
Like they're all on like a rotating platform and this creepy kids song plays in the background. And hopefully we'll be able to figure out a way to get to play you a little snippet of that in the show, because it's just so eerie. And and when it stops, they have to form into groups and run into rooms, and if you don't, you know, and then you end up getting,
if you have the wrong number of people in the room, yeah, you get, you're done.
Yeah.
That's drawn out for quite a while. Like that's a good chunk of an episode, but it, you know, it's so tense and well done. You don't know who's going to get shot and, you know, and killed and eliminated from the game. So a lot like the Hunger Games, you know, it builds that tension and does it really well and presents it in a striking visual way. So yeah, there's enough set pieces like that pull you along. Even if the pacing sometimes feels a little slow, or it feels a little slow to get started in the first few episodes.
Yeah.
I was compelled the whole way. I mean, I think because it's seven episodes instead of, you know, what I don't remember what the first season was, maybe 10 or 12.
12.
Or, it doesn't drag as much. There's not as much backstory to kind of get bogged down in with all the characters. You, by this point, you know what's going on.
Yeah, you understand what the game is. Well, and it's interesting too, because like since Squid Game is a highly influential piece of culture, and you know, since then there've been some knockoffs, like Mr. Beast is doing his own version of the Squid Game right now on Amazon Prime, the Beast Games. And there's also a Squid Game challenge, like a reality show using the same sets and using a lot of the same games. That was also on Netflix. I mean, I thought that was actually horrible because, you know, there's no real stakes. Like they obviously didn't kill 455 people for real, but they were still playing Squid Game. It's very influential. And so you think like, all right, well, this is something that could easily, you know, 3 years later, can you come back and not have the same raw energy? that the first Squid Game did, and I think they've been very successful.
Yeah, and I think it's very smart in the way it's written, and it's very smart in the way that it still feels contemporary and still feels current. I mean, one of the things I pointed out in my review was that, you know, there are multiple scenes where the characters vote on whether to continue the games, even though, you know, people have already been getting killed, and they already know what the stakes are by this point. They know that they're in danger of getting killed. Yet they continue to vote because the money that they're going to walk away with at that point still is not enough to cover some of their debts.
Right.
So there's that ongoing tension. And, you know, we've got our main character who's like, what are you people doing? Why we could survive this if you'd all just vote to leave, and they don't. And you know, there's that sinking feeling as you're watching his face as the votes are coming in, which are, you know, pretty, you know, drawn out. Of like, this is not going to go our way. We're stuck here, yeah. Because of ourselves, because of the other people voting. Which, yeah, I don't know if you've ever felt that way, but it feels very of the moment. And the other thing that's interesting about it is that the creator of the show has said that he really didn't make a lot of money on the first season, and doing these, you know, this season two and season three, which will conclude the show. This is his way of making money on Squid Game.
Well, that's fine. More power to him because,
oh, yeah.
Because I gotta say, you know, I you and I both watched a lot of TV in our lives, and Squid Game is, you know, it's at this point, especially given this, that the second season is a success in terms of audience and also artistically, you got to consider it one of the greatest TV shows of all time.
Yeah, more power to him. I mean, I'm glad he's getting his money. And the show itself, you know, has from the beginning, has been a commentary on capitalism, a commentary on income disparity. And I think the show is self-referential in that way, in that it is kind of commenting on consumer culture, on kind of this, you know, voting against your own self-interest in, you know, in order to get ahead, or financially. And I do think that in part, this second season is a response to kind of the popularity of Squid Game, in the same way that the second Joker movie was trying to be a response to the success of the first movie, but done much more, much better.
Right. But the difference is that unlike the second Joker movie, this show repeats what people actually liked about Squid Game. And the fact of the matter is, you know, as someone who has, you know, made quite a bit of money playing television game shows, you know, there is an element of this is my one shot to actually, like, get ahead in the world. And so it feels very real and visceral to anyone who's ever competed on a game show. I mean, whatever, going on Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune or The Price is Right is not like going on Squid Game. But, you know, but going on reality shows where you're voting people off and where people are eliminated and all that, it's like, it's a metaphor for our times.
Yeah. And he does a very, very good job with the writing, with the directing, with, you know, with just visually, you know, giving it his signature, that it never feels like a cash in. It never feels like he's just going through the motions. It still feels visceral. It still feels like it's trying to deliver a message on capitalism, you know, even more so than the first season, I think.
It's got something to say. It's got something to say, and it says it in an incredibly entertaining way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the writing is still spot on, and, you know, you could argue that there's some clunky things or some predictable things, but it's, to me, it felt like it's more Squid Game. It's more of what we loved about the first season.
Well, it's Korean. So, like, there is some hammy acting that, you know, there's some, I would consider it bad acting. I don't know, maybe for Korean dramas, that's just par for the course. So there's some melodrama, right? There's some, yep. Some operatic things that you might not see in a more muted, you know, sort of English language production. But I mean, it's close enough. And I know that David Fincher is making an English language version of Squid Game, but he'd be hard pressed to duplicate what makes this so effective.
Yeah, I think it would need its own sort of visual style and visual kind of elements to it. I mean, yeah. I don't think copying the kind of the color palette and the look of this series is going to work, and, you know, and translated that way, I think it would just feel like a copy. I think it, you know, but you know, if anyone's going to give it an interesting visual mark, it's going to be someone like David Fincher. Yeah. So yeah, that might be exciting.
All right, well, Squid Game 2 is on Netflix now. Omar and I give it very high marks, and I don't recommend that you actually play a Squid Game competition if you're given the opportunity in real life, but you should definitely watch the show. Omar, thank you so much. Now we can go mingle.
Thank you, Neil. This was fun. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much, Omar Gayaga. Squid Game 2 is now on Netflix. And also thanks to Jessica Babbitt. Good luck, Jessica, and only winners in the building in your second round game on Pop Culture Jeopardy, which is airing on Amazon Prime. 3 new episodes every Wednesday. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We are a product of Sea of Reeds Media, which also owns two terrific bookstores in New Jersey, the Bookhouse in Millburn and the Bookhouse in Long Branch. And you can also support those bookstores by making them affiliate links on bookshop.org, which is where we have a kind of residual purchasing agreement. Support your independent bookstores, support independent media, and watch Pop Culture Jeopardy. I will talk to you next week.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.